Welcome to the Seven Figure Leaders podcast. This podcast was created to celebrate the success stories of seven-figure business owners, giving them a platform to share their insights and lessons learned in order to inspire other business owners. As well as that, it's an opportunity to build new connections. So if you're a seven-figure business owner or someone who works with seven-figure business owners, and you're looking for introductions to potential stakeholders, strategic partners, and clients, I'd love to hear from you or have you on as a guest and see if I can help make those connections for you. Just go to synergycfosolutions.co. That's synergycfosolutions.co and click podcast. And there you'll find the link to apply. Welcome. And today we've got Chris Warden from Director First. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks for inviting me.
So, Chris, let's place to start. Why didn't you give us a bit of background as to who you are and what you do?
Okay, yeah. I'll tell you a little bit about who I was, what happened, and what I do today. So I'm a chap from the north of England. We're based in Preston, and I work in director advisory, business rescue, turnaround, and insolvency. I've been doing this for many years now, but I never come into this industry in the same route as most of my peers who will have gone to university. They may have had an accountancy background, and they've just veered into insolvency. What happened to me in around 2014, 2015, I had a business that went becoming solvent. And a little bit of background, we worked in the renewable energy sector and the energy efficiency programs. And we had a great little business. Overnight, the government changed the goalpost yet again. And we were sort of faced with the fact that actually this business model, it had stopped. It no longer worked. Now, we'd have got through that, but a few weeks later, we found out our first ever introduction to insolvency was somebody who owed us money had gone bust in liquidation, and we owed £200,000. And that was like really was the straw that broke the camel's back. And I was just a rabbit in the headlights. Like, I've always figured things out in life, loads of challenges that come at us, and I've always managed to get through the other side, learn about something. And I did this. I sort of went on this damaged rabbit hole of learning about insolvency on websites, and I went to see these things called insolvency practitioners, and it was a terrible experience because the websites sort of give you a little bit of information, but not enough to make a decision. And the whole idea was pick the phone up and go and see somebody. So I suppose that's marketing 101. And I went out to see these insolvency practitioners, and I left the meetings really confused. The advice that I was given from one to another was quite conflicting. And the bedside manner was terrible. Like, I was, I had a young family. I was not there through anything that I'd done wrong. It was a change in government legislation. My debts were fairly low. I couldn't pay the last VAT quarter or the corporation tax, and I was in dispute with the supplier. So it hadn't been built up over a long period of time. And I sat down with these people, and they scared the life out of me. Like, they spoke to me like a naughty schoolboy, like a criminal. And the worst thing was, no one would give me a straight answer. So I eventually found an insolvency practitioner that gave me a little bit more information. Even that experience, there was some hidden nasties that bit me on the backside down the line. But through the process, I went, you know what? I really think we could perhaps generate you some work here, because I'd been in business for some time. I had quite a good reputation. I had strong business connections. And we sort of sat on this path to generate a few inquiries. And it just sort of took off from there. I worked with a guy who'd been in insolvency for years and years. He really, really helped me. And then what happened in about 2019, I started to think, well, do you know what? Nobody really tells information about what people really need to hear. And I started to do these videos, much to the ridicule of everyone I work with and everyone in the industry. And then 2020 comes, and insolvency advice, people needed to understand it. And our business just really, really took off. Today we are probably the largest generator of corporate insolvency appointments. We are the number one rated insolvency business for corporate insolvency on Trustpilot, number one for Liquidator, number one for insolvency service, number one for management consultant. And it's because we talk to people really straight. We make a very complex subject very, very easy to understand. And once we've had a good chat with you, we're going to send you to YouTube where you can go and educate yourself. We've got hours and hours and hours and hours of content that answers absolutely every single question you have on insolvency. And the idea is to educate people so they don't make mistakes. Because the problem with insolvencies is directors don't know what questions to ask, and that can cause them huge problems down the road. So today, I'm the founder of Director First Insolvency. I still make lots of videos. We help hundreds of directors. I have young children. I support a terrible football team called Preston North End. And that's about me in 4 or 5 minutes.
So if we go back a step then, you said directors don't know which questions to ask. What questions should they be asking, and at what point should they be asking them? Because there's a fine line between having severe cash flow issues and the point that you need to declare, go into liquidation or speak to an insolvency practitioner. So what is that line, and what are the questions that directors should be asking? It's a kind of an educational piece there.
Okay, so I think it needs to start with, they've got to have someone like you on the team. They have to have a finance facility, a finance function. And they need to be getting information from me on a monthly basis, which is the basic information, profit and loss, reviewing the balance sheet, looking at what money's coming in, 13-week rolling cash flow. And what that allows you to do is it allows you to spot problems early. And it allows you to plan for things like paying HMRC. It helps you make better decisions, for instance, if you need to raise some finance. Now, the problem, I think, is a lot of people don't have this finance function. They see it as a cost, which is the wrong way to look at it. It's got to be an investment in your business. But let me tell you the typical client that I might speak to is they're having their accounts done by their accountant, and they think their accountant does a lot more than they're actually paying for.
Yeah.
Your year-end accounts are about as much use as a chocolate tea cozy when it comes to making decisions on your business, because it's essentially a snapshot of how your business was sometime in the past.
Yeah.
You've got to do them to stay out of prison, okay? And don't get me wrong, an accountant's an important function in your business, but it's not helping you make decisions. I'll get a client who'll ring me, they've got issues with HMRC, they can't pay their bounce back loan, C-bills, recovery loan, creditor pressure, they've got too much month at the end of the money. Now, the first thing I'm going to go through with them is like, are you insolvent? Very easy way to understand if your business is insolvent is, can you pay your debts when they fall due? If you're in a time to pay arrangement with HMRC, it's a sign that you're insolvent. The next insolvency test is a balance sheet test. And it's like, are your assets worth more than your liabilities? So assets are plant, machinery, vehicles, money owed in, cash in the bank, website, intangible assets. And if you sold all of those, would you be able to pay your debts off? Yes or no? Now, if you fail those two insolvency tests, it's a clear sign that your business is in trouble. There is another one called the legal action test, and that is if your business has a CCJ against it or a stat demand or dear God, a winding up petition's been presented, it's another clear sign that you're insolvent. Now, just because you're insolvent, let's say on a cash flow basis, so you get this a lot with seasonal businesses, construction sector, and what will happen is they are behind, they can't make their next HMRC VAT payment. They can't pay corporation tax when it falls due. Now, it's important to understand where you're at, but it's not necessarily enough to pick up the phone to somebody like me. The determining factor is, have you got a hope of recovery? So let's just pick a seasonal business, for example. In a seasonal business, it's quarter four. You might have had a less than expected profitable quarter four. So that's caused you some issues. But you know at quarter four this year, things look like they're going to turn around. But if you're looking at things and you really don't think you're going to recover from this, that's the time to be picking up the phone to somebody like me. And what that allows you to do is understand your options. So I think that is the problems that I see, Tom, is people don't get accurate information regularly. Therefore, they just don't have a good foundation to make financial decisions. And they're ringing me when it's too late. You know, if you're having difficulties, you're robbing Peter to pay Paul, you're dodging phone calls, and you've got this sinking feeling in your stomach that things aren't going to work out, I think that's a good time to pick the phone up.
Yeah, interesting. You touched on a lot of really interesting points there. So yeah, accountant, generally speaking, when you meet with them, if you meet with them, it's going to be 4 to 6 months after the end of the previous year. So the numbers you're looking at are ongoing monthly management accounts or relatively accurate data is non-existent, or if it is, it's not reviewed regularly.
Absolutely.
So now, by the time they contact you, if they contact you, they're basing that call that they make on a gut instinct that something's not right. And by that point, it's often too late. So yeah, some really interesting points there. So let's say someone calls you. Can you give us an example of a situation where you could help them recover from their situation and what you can help them with?
I'll tell you about a call I've just taken. So a property company has been presented with a winding up petition. Now, a winding up petition is really serious. It's the end of the sort of creditor action and it's from HMRC. They petition more than anybody else. Now, the petition's landed. It's going to be advertised in a few weeks' time. And that will essentially mean the business bank account gets frozen and it becomes advertised and it gets a lot more difficult to deal with. Now, the interesting thing with this business is the reason why it fell behind with HMRC, to a degree, is no fault of their own. They got caught up in, there was a legal firm, Axiom Int, and it was closed down. Allegedly, the legal firms were misappropriating client funds. But the top and bottom of it is they held £800,000 that was to be discharged once the council didn't need a CIL payment. And they had an £800,000 deposit for a property deal. So they're holding £1.6 million worth of this company funds. Now, if that then funds are in the business, the HMRC would be discharged. There is no issue here. But the petition's been presented. So we've gone through all the options here. And actually, sadly, the right option for this business is to place the business into liquidation. By placing the business into liquidation voluntarily, they're able to choose an insolvency firm that they want to work with. Now, there's a bit of a complication with this job. There is a £390,000 intercompany balance from another property company. Now, if they get wound up compulsory, it's quite negative press. It's not good if you're in property to have had a winding up petition and to be forced into compulsory liquidation. But worse than that, a government body called the Official Receiver will take the job. They don't really have any commerciality. They will literally look at the company that owes the £390,000, and it's highly likely they'll start another action against that company. Therefore, this whole group of companies could fall over. So what we've decided that we're going to do is, once this money gets paid from Axiom, there's obviously an insurance, there's a claim against their insurance. The money will come into the liquidator's estate. The liquidator's not going to start hassling the parent company for this £390,000 intercompany balance. What they're going to do is they're going to get it into liquidation, therefore halting the action from HMRC. It'd be an orderly wind down, and they will wait and sort of be complementary to the insurance claim. The money will come in from the insurance claim. There'll be a dividend. Essentially, the HMRC will get all their money, and there'll actually be a surplus sent over to the shareholders. So that's just one example of company that I spoke to before jumping on this podcast today.
Okay, that's really helpful. Any other scenarios that you can explain, just to give everyone an idea of the type of things that you can
That help? Was a bit more of a unique scenario. So let's just do a very, very typical inquiry that will come here. So again, HMRC are really aggressive at the moment. The sentiment's changed. They are on people's doorsteps. They are issuing winding up petitions. And let's say we get an inquiry, they'll normally be HMRC that breaks the camel's back. And they might owe the HMRC 50 grand, 100 grand, £1 million, whatever that figure is, it's all relative. And it's likely that in addition to HMRC, they'll owe a bounce back loan or a C-bills, or they may have taken a recovery loan. I see lots of directors now that take these personally guaranteed debts, might be Funding Circle, might be IWOC, a Capital on Tap, and type of lenders. And there's obviously got the money owed to suppliers as well. And it's like, well, what's the outcome that the director, we've got to start off, what's the outcome that the director's looking for? And can we get them from A to B legally without breaking any rules? So if the business is, it's the end of the line, they literally want to stop, they don't want to start again, the best scenario is generally a liquidation, and it's a full stop at the end of it. And a liquidation is an orderly wind down. You always, always must appoint a liquidator voluntarily. Do not go down the compulsory route, because the compulsory route comes with added complications. The first thing that the director is going to be accused of is not behaving within their fiduciary duties. They're going to be behaving negligently. That's where they can get disqualified. If you appoint a liquidator...
So what's the difference between compulsory and voluntary? So voluntary is obviously where the director chooses it, but compulsory, is that dictated by HMRC or?
Good question. The difference between a compulsory and a voluntary liquidation. A compulsory liquidation is where a creditor has tried to recover funds. Generally, this happens from HMRC, but other creditors can use it. And they'll go, right, well, I've tried to call, I've tried to write, I've gone to see this, we're getting nowhere, we're going to issue a winding up petition. And again, a winding up petition goes, they go to court, the petition gets landed on the director's doorstep. And then they've got a couple of weeks where they have to act before it gets advertised. If it gets advertised, bank account gets frozen, it becomes public available information. And it's highly likely that other creditors of your business will jump on the back of that petition. If you don't do anything, you get your day in court. If it's not paid in full, the company is forcibly wound up. The official receiver, which is a government department, will essentially get in the hot seat and they will grill the director. First thing they're going to accuse them of is not behaving responsibly. The consequences of forced compulsory liquidations, more likely to be disqualified from being a director. We're seeing more personal liability notices being issued for things like unpaid VAT, PAYE. And that's where a director can become personally liable. And obviously, you've lost control with a compulsory liquidation. So a voluntary is where you decide, okay, my business is becoming solvent as per balance sheet, cash flow, maybe legal action. And I'm going to go out there, I'm going to find an insolvency practitioner that I want to work with. My advice, make sure you speak to a few people. It's a big, big decision. Please, please, please do a lot of due diligence on the firm. Okay. And then with a voluntary liquidation, what you do is you appoint, let's go to the liquidation scenario, which is a full stop. And you will appoint that liquidator, and there will be an orderly wind down of the company. Staff will be made redundant. Big worry for a lot of directors if they can't pay redundancy. As long as staff have been there over 2 years, they will be able to claim all statutory redundancy, capped at about £658 a week from the redundancy payment service, and the insolvency practitioner will assist with that. And even if staff haven't been there for 2 years, they'll be able to claim notice pay as per their contract, unpaid holiday that's been accrued and not taken, and unpaid wages. Okay. Now, in a liquidation, generally the assets are sold to realize some funds for creditors. And in certain scenarios, they can actually even be sold back to the director of the company as long as they're paying a fair market value for them. So that's like a full stop. There's a thing called a pre-pack that people will have heard, and it's really suited to an administration. And an administration really needs to... The key thing to an administration is it provides a better return to the creditors of a company than a liquidation would. So let's say there are 20, 30 staff. The director has some, the company has some assets. An administration is a wall of protection. So it stops legal action. In that period, a marketing period commences, generally 7 to 10 days. An agent will value the business. And at the end of the marketing period, the directors will make an offer to buy the business. And it's sold pre-administration. On that day, the deal completes. It gets handed over to the solicitors. And the new company rises from the administration, generally with the same directors. All the staff have been too paid over, and they're starting again with a lot of the legacy debt gone. Obviously, there are issues with personal guarantees that we've spoken about. And the key thing with personal guarantees is you can negotiate them, because in an insolvency, be it liquidation or an administration, the lender is going to go, right, well, we want demand for payment. Now, that frightens the life out of directors. But the key thing is to be proactive and speak to all the lenders, and you will, in 99% of cases, be able to restructure those debts over a longer period of time. The lender just wants to hear some credible proposals for repayment. And generally, when you're starting a new company, then first 6 months, cash flow is really tight. So you should be able to negotiate with that lender where you'll pay minimal payments for 6 months while that business gets on its feet, and then step up those payments over a longer period of time. So they're two sort of normal scenarios that people would use.
So what would be the downside of the pre-pack?
Well, I think the downside of a pre-pack is obviously creditors aren't going to get paid. Now, if you're a business and you don't pay your supply chain, there's a question mark as to whether they're going to want to work with you again. You know, the downside is I think with an administration, the public's perception is better than that of a liquidation, because it's seen as a rescue process. A business is going into admin and it's being bought out to save jobs and, you know, save the business. But there's still that perception that you've gone through an insolvency process to escape paying debts. But the reality is an administration isn't something you wake up and think, I'm going to do this to avoid paying the debts. It's the last step on the train line. Generally speaking, the director has tried his best. They've probably, forgone salary themselves. They may have even pumped money into the business. And like I said, they may have taken on personally guaranteed debts, which are going to fall on them once they go through a process. So the downsides, you've got to start again. You know, there's going to be can be a negative perception. You're going to have to get bank accounts set up. You're going to have to negotiate leases potentially. And you're going to have to buy this business out of administration. It's not going to be cheap. You're going to have to pay a fair market value for that business to start again. But of course, you know, it's not the golden bullet. And you've got to be really, really sure that this is going to work. And again, I think that's where it's really important to have somebody like you in there to actually run some cash flows and go, you know, are we doing this on a whim or in a prayer? Are we going to be in the same position in 6 months' time?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so Chris, so for anyone listening to this who's thought, right, I need to have a chat with Chris, or maybe I need to have a chat with Chris, I'm not sure. Who is that person?
So for me, if you're a director who is worried, you're not paying HMRC, you're in a time to pay arrangement and you feel that you're about to break the time to pay arrangement. If you're constantly robbing Peter to pay Paul, if you're concerned about staff's redundancy, if your market is shrinking, if your revenues are dropping and your costs are increasing, it's a recipe for disaster. We offer free and independent and impartial advice. You probably won't get to speak to me straight away. You'll be speaking to one of my team. But 99 maybe not 99, a large percentage of our inquiries don't end up in insolvency. They end up in some advisory that we don't charge you for. We help you understand your position. We'll reward you through your options. And we'll train you how to speak to creditors. We'll train you how to speak to HMRC. And you'll get off the phone to us and you'll never have to speak to us again. The only thing that we'll ask you for, and even that's not compulsory, is a Trustpilot review.
Brilliant. Okay, Chris. Well, it sounds like you're adding a tremendous amount of value to a lot of business owners who need support, who perhaps in a cash flow crunch, not sure whether they're insolvent or need to, you know, go into insolvency. So what we'll do is we'll make it very easy for anyone to contact you. So we'll put your LinkedIn and your website in the show notes. And it's been a pleasure to have you on the podcast and looking forward to working with you a bit more.
Tom, thanks for inviting me, buddy. Appreciate it.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. As I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, this podcast was created to celebrate the success stories of seven-figure business owners, giving them a platform to share their insights and lessons learned in order to inspire other business owners. As well as that, it's an opportunity to build new connections. So if you're a seven-figure business owner or someone who works with seven-figure business owners and you're looking for introductions to potential stakeholders, strategic partners, and clients, I'd love to hear from you or have you on as a guest and see if I can help make those connections for you. Just go to synergycfosolutions.co. That's synergycfosolutions.co and click podcast. On that page, you'll find the link to apply.